At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
What's going on, everybody? Tonight's video, I am bringing you 5 terrifying desert stories. For those of you that live in Arizona, New Mexico, Western Texas, and so on, be safe out there, because you never know what's crawling in the sand. Now sit back, relax, dim those lights, and let's get spooky. I've always been a history buff. As a child, I was completely captivated by the stories of my grandmother. She had endless tales to spin about the Wild West. Shootouts, cowpokes, and the countless people headed west to strike it rich. These stories made the likes of Buffalo Bill and Jesse James my heroes. To this day, they are near and dear to my heart. My grandmother's tales always ended on the same subject. My great-great-grandfather, in my grandmother's words, he was the truest frontiersman to ever set foot and find his fortune. As far as my grandmother could tell me, it seems he found what he was looking for or met his end on the trail because he never went back to his family in the East. To have a relative who lived the legends I dreamed about left me beaming every time my visits with Grandma came to an end. Those stories will be what I miss most now that she has passed. She died in her sleep after a long and fulfilling 76 years. Rather than socializing in her later years, she was much happier with her books and spaghetti westerns. So I was practically the only one at her funeral besides a couple of neighbors and the priest. My mother, her daughter, passed away about 5 years ago. Cancer's a biatch, became my grandmother and I's motto when we would reminisce about my mom. My grandmother's will turned out to be as blunt and straight to the chase as she could. Give the kid everything. With no cousins to speak of jockeying for my grandmother's knickknacks and jewelry. I took my time shifting through the echoes of the life she led. It wasn't long before I came across a hefty trunk tucked away in the back of her garage. Despite the thick cobwebs obscuring its form, I could tell it was old. Fell off a genuine 19th century stagecoach type of old. Once the trunk was opened, I was greeted with thousands of pages of paper. Some in envelopes, some in the form of books, some just loose pages. For a reason I can't explain, I pushed my hand through the layers of papers towards the bottom of the trunk. The tips of my fingers were stopped by something bound in leather before I could reach the bottom. I pulled the object out of the avalanche of paper cuts waiting to happen and relieved it to be a small leather-bound book. The owner of this journal made their identity known on the inside cover. Henry Crane, my great-great-grandfather. My childhood passion for the West reignited. I practically haven't slept for the past 3 days and nights as I read through Henry Crane's journeys working as a guide leading settlers to California during the twilight years of the Gold Rush. I pored over the pages detailing my relative's exploits, each page filling me with more pride than the last. At least until I reached the end of the journal, which chronicled the final 2 weeks or so of what appeared to be his last expedition, leading a group to California. I will transcribe Henry's entries here in the hope that someone can help me make sense of them. I wish I could discount his writings as delusion, but his entries leading up to the final 2 weeks depicted a very rational and pragmatic man. I will add context to his entries at certain points, and will mark these additions with parentheses. With that said, maybe this undertaking will allow me to finally sleep again, or maybe I'm merely passing on this burden to all of you. Tuesday, October 2nd, 1855. We've made good progress again today. With good luck, I expect we'll be clear of the Utah Territory in little more than a fortnight. This is just a best guess, but it appears Henry's group was in what is now northern Nevada. I also expect my two old nags pulling our wagon will have to retire after this trip. They've served me fine, but I could tell they'll be lame by the time we reach Sacramento. It don't help none that Emily's boy Jeb and our resident princess Anna are trying their best to avoid walking at all during this trek. They put up a mighty fuss when we tell them to get out of the wagon to give the horses a fighting chance to get over a hill. Lost count of how many times I told Emily she's too soft on the boy. Won't always be a buggy waiting around to whisk Jeb wherever he wants to go. Our Princess Anna is truly a lost cause. Some 19-year-olds of being coddled by her daddy's money has truly spoiled her rotten. I suspect her big businessman daddy traveled from Virginia to California ahead of her, simply to avoid hearing about why there's always dirt messing up her new yellow dress she is so fond of. Between her fondness for the dress and her heavy-as-all-hell stash of canned treats, she puts up a mighty fight not to hop out of the wagon when we hit the trail. I ain't letting none of y'all lay a finger on these apricots. My daddy got them just for me for this trip, not for any of you, is what she bellows if she catches any of us glancing at her personal provisions. It has something to do with the new pescatarian diet that's becoming popular back east. But she would never lower herself to partake in our usual supper of jerky and any small game we happen to snag that day. Well, anyway, I heard Emily tucking into Jeb now as the light is getting low. I also hear Miguel exercising his powers as a second-in-command to give Patrick's a tongue-lashing for getting blind drunk as soon as we pitched camp. Miguel can't stand that Patrick's dire need of the hair on the hog every morning delays our travels. It irks me as well, but Patrick comes from money, much like Anna. I learned that money smooths over most sores long ago. Miguel will too understand that one day. Wednesday, October 3rd, 1855. As Miguel prophesied, Patrick wasted our first couple of hours of daylight recovering from his trip into the bottle. Still, no matter how dog-tired his habits leave him, he always has the spunk for his second favorite habit, pestering Miss Anna. Notwithstanding Patrick being nearly 30 years her elder, Miguel is smitten with the princess, and thus it boils his blood like nothing else. I could hear Miguel's grip on the reins tighten as he listens in on Patrick talking about the fine things he could provide Anna. Anna rebukes that drunk every time. I don't think even Patrick has a good measure of the mile-high expectations that a girl like Anna has, making it all the most sad that Miguel has taken to her so hopelessly. I see that pendejo try something on Anna, and he'll spend the rest of his trip being dragged by this wagon, is what Miguel said after hearing some more of Patrick's clumsy attempts at courting. I talked with Miguel tonight after we set up camp. I did my best to enlighten him about customers like Patrick. They have money, but won't talk about where it's from. Or, for that matter, where they're from. Experience has taught me they're usually running from some dark deeds. It's best to keep our business with these types as transactional as can be. Drop them off, and then hit the road again with as little fraternizing as possible. Still, I remember the feeling of young love burning a hole in my chest. So I feared the words are falling on deaf ears with Miguel. I could hear Emily.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Leading Jeb into their nightly prayers now in their tent. Amazing that she still has the energy for that after spending the day wrangling the little devil lest he run off into the wild. Hearing those familiar words reminded me of my May back home, leading our little Delilah through their prayers. I better end this here. Tomorrow's another day getting only farther away from home, but closer to a thicker billfold. Thursday, October 4th, 1855. Today started less than pleasant for all of us. Our collective slumber was broken by the most awful caterwauling one can envision. All of us burst out of our tents to find the culprit was Miss Anna. It took me a minute of calming her down as she paced around our burnt-out fire pit before we could get her to speak about what had spooked her. My tent was all we could get out of her. Miguel took the lead to investigate and soon returned to tell us about a tear in the wall of her tent. I inspected it myself as well. A jagged hole about 7 inches in length to the left of where she would have laid her head at night, was now present. Miguel took to comforting her and talking about all matter of pesky but harmless critters that could have done that. Miguel was probably right, but it didn't stop Emily from keeping Jeb even closer to her side for today's travel. As usual, Anna hopped in the wagon where we set off but tucked her legs to her chest as she sat and hummed some song I didn't recognize to soothe herself. This girl should have never left the city. Despite his assurances about the tent-defying critters, I could see the suspicions rising in Miguel. He drifted off the trail at least twice today as he tried his best to keep Patrick within his sight. Patrick's a lot of things, but I don't reckon he's bold like that. Regardless, Miguel has already offered his intact tent to Anna and promised to sleep it rough tonight under the stars to keep an eye on her. I'm sure he won't find Patrick crawling around the tents like some coyote tonight, but Miguel won't be dissuaded. I've retired to my tent now, and I'm immensely road-weary. We all are. Emily's prayers and Anna's humming are making my eyes heavy. Friday, October 5th, 1855. For once, we got an early start today. I awoke to Miguel and Anna gathering sticks and twigs to try to breathe some life into our fire. She seemed really grateful to Miguel for being her sentinel last night. Of course, Miguel was more than happy to lap into her words of appreciation. Little did she know, I could hear Miguel snoring away before my eyes closed. but I won't spoil his small victory. Also, to Miguel and Anna's benefit, Patrick instead spent today's leg of the trek pestering Emily and me about some glowing eyes he had saw out in the brush from his tent as he nursed the last drops of another bottle. Emily was quick to scold him for his perceived attempt to frighten her boy. He was steadfast at his convictions about what he saw. It never fails to amuse me how these folks react to the typical coyote attracted to the light of the fire. I told them as much, and how the crumbs we leave behind mean there's a whole pack of little critters trailing us most likely. This bit of wisdom made Jeb clutch his mama's leg even harder than before, and got me a scolding of my own as well. They don't realize this little pack benefits us too. Just today, Miguel managed to bag us a couple of squirrels with his .22. They became a fine stew that everyone was eager to get a ladle of. Warm food is a luxury on these trips. A luxury I won't worry that will become a necessity soon. Winter is on our heels, and the mountains ahead of us we got across aren't getting bigger fast enough. I'm gonna have to push the nags harder tomorrow. Luckily, Anna has taken the walking alongside the wagon to talk to Miguel. It's a relief for the nags, I'm sure. Everyone turned in early to escape the cold tonight. It got to be too much for Anna's guard as well. Miguel bundled himself up in the blankets he could grab and made a spot in the wagon for the night. Even Patrick didn't partake in spirits tonight. A seasoned drinker knows it only makes you colder in the end, no matter what warmness it starts with. I would know. Seeing him tilt these bottles up stirs bad memories. But I won't fall into that again, for the sake of May and Delilah. Saturday, October 6, 1855. It was not the sunrise, but Jeb's shrill cries for his mama that roused me. I bolted and reached Emily and Jeb's tent first. I found him sitting inside with only his skivvies on, with tears and snot running down his face. Emily was nowhere to be seen. I asked the boy where she was, but his answers were gibberish, interrupted by sobbing. Anna crawled into the tent next, and I had her get the boy dressed and look after him. She didn't protest the responsibility and hummed that song to the boy as she got him clothed. I got Miguel informed about the development and had him wake the still snoring Patrick to help him in the search. As Patrick bickered with Miguel about waking him up, I searched the perimeter of our camp for any signs as to where Emily had gone. I only found our tracks leading up to the camp and a set of coyote tracks that stopped short of entering the circle of tents we had set. If Emily had stepped out into the night for some reason only God knows, she left not a trace of her doing it. Anna and Jeb took shelter in the wagon as Miguel, Patrick, and I expanded our search into the brush. We didn't gain any more miles today. Our search for Emily took up all our daylight. Despite six eyes looking, we found not a thing. Not a stray hair, not a footprint within a half a mile of camp. The sun got low without us noticing, and we had the call to search off. By the time we got back, Jeb wasn't crying anymore, but was still on the verge of tears as he explained to Anna that he didn't see when his mama left. However, he swore he heard something walking around the camp last night. The tracks I'd saw told no such story. But still, Jeb was insistent. I ordered everyone to bed early that night and promised the boy I'd find his mama. Miguel took up a spot next to the fire with his .22 and took watch. I warned him we'd be up early to continue the search, and he said to pay him no mind. Miguel better have his wits about him when they take up the search again tomorrow. We've lost not only the boy's mama, but a customer as well. Sunday, October 7th, 1855. I can barely keep my eyes open as I'm writing this. My mornings started off at an ungodly hour. Felt like maybe 2 or 3 at night. The sound of something dragging its feet along between our tents woke me. I scrambled to poke my head out of my tent to see what had decided to enter our camp. Maybe an injured or sick Emily had made her way back to us. All I saw was an empty camp and a weakly smoldering fire. I wasn't getting any more sleep, of that I was sure. So I took to bringing the fire back to life and took watch. Maybe it was the fire playing tricks on my eyes or the sleep that clouded my mind, but I thought I saw something nearly a mile out in the brush. A pair of eyes glowing dim yellow. I think they were eyes at least, but I swear they didn't blink once while I stared at them till the sun appeared. With the sun aiding us again, the three of us took to scouting the dirt and weeds that surrounded our camp as far as the eye could see. Before we knew it, it was noon. We had nothing to show for our efforts. I couldn't stomach the thought of coming back again without Emily, so I followed a hunch and walked towards to where I had seen the eyes that night. I made it about a mile and a half when I found something tucked away in a bush. A woman's shoe. Emily's shoe. That wasn't the only thing I found there. Strange tracks were snaking around.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Found the area. At first glance, they seemed to belong to a coyote, but they weren't right. The spacing of the tracks had made it seem like a coyote decided to start walking on 2 legs. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up and I hightailed it back to camp. I came back to a ruckus at the camp. Patrick had given up the search, and Miguel had followed him back to dish out another tongue-lashing about it. "She's gone, you idiot, and we can't waste any more time here. The passes are going to freeze." Patrick bellowed in Miguel's face before he realized I had made it back to camp. I could see Jeb, scared and crying, peeking out of the wagon. I hated to admit it, but I had reached the same conclusion long before I returned to camp. I pulled Miguel aside and told him to help me pack the tents and ready the horses. He started to protest, but the look on my face stopped him from making a fuss. We had to capitalize on the remaining hours of daylight. It broke my heart, but I couldn't let Jeb's screams for us to stop keep us from reaching the end of our trek. Jeb had cried himself to sleep by the time we reached our current camp. Miguel and I got busy with the tents while Patrick got busy finding a bottle. Looks like Anna is going to spend the night in the wagon looking over Jeb. I could hear her soothing him with that song from my tent right now. Seems she has a motherly side. At least someone will get some sleep tonight. I had a feeling that if I peeked my head out, I'd find those eyes somewhere out there in the night. Wednesday, October 10th, 1855. I haven't had time to write these past 2 nights. The winter chill is chasing us faster than I've ever seen in years past. Our progress is growing slower, too. The nags are feeling the weight of the wagon more and more. Their stops to catch their breath are growing longer after each hill we summit. It didn't help that the wagon is still weighed down by Anna's stash of cans that don't seem to be shrinking at all. It's Jeb that the last 2 days have taken the greatest toll on. He didn't cry for his mama anymore. He didn't do much of anything anymore. He just clung to Anna's side as she stroked his hair. At least she could get him to hop out of the wagon and walk with her when we cross through mud and rocks and need the shed weight. Miguel and Patrick are at each other's throats more than ever. Somehow, Patrick still has the energy to pester Anna despite all those miles and bottles drained behind us. "We're not going to make it anyway, so what does it matter if we tie a few on?" has become Patrick's new creed. I hate to admit it, but every day he's sounding more right. Those mountains aren't getting closer fast enough. Moreover, these last 2 nights I've woken to some noise of an unknown origin and peeked out of the tent to see yellow eyes lingering in the distance. Thursday, October 11th, 1855. I awoke to the sound of expletives being hurled by Miguel and Patrick at each other. I put my pants on as quickly as I could and saw those two standing practically nose to nose with each other as they hurled abuse at each other. Miguel gave the news when I noticed I had started towards them to break up the spat. My heart dropped as soon as the words left his lips.
"Anna's gone."
I knew with all the rage building in those two, they hadn't checked on the other members of the group. I found Jeb still in the wagon. He sat on a pile of blankets staring towards the ground, looking white as a sheet. The boy couldn't even acknowledge that I was there. Wasn't even crying. Just sat there mumbling that he had heard his mama's voice last night. I turned my attention back to the two men, who now looked like more of rabid dogs ready to tear each other's throats out. I pushed them apart and told them to get their wits about them, and that we wouldn't have a chance at finding Anna like this. This realization both silenced them and gave us all a sobering epiphany. We couldn't stop to look for her. We couldn't afford to lose the time. I'd be signing our own death certificates. With our new mutual understanding, we packed only 3 of the tents, leaving the stragglers behind. Miguel went about throwing out Anna's cans, about 4 crates of them. Good as they are as food, we can't keep pulling their weight. This time, Jeb didn't protest as we set off for the day. He just sat quietly in the wagon. Miguel spent the whole day muttering conspiracies to himself about how he knew Patrick had to have done something to Anna. He cursed the man's name practically every 50 feet. There's plenty to loathe about the man, but a silent stalker of the night is far from who he was. When he hits the bottle, he can't walk a straight line for even 2 yards, let alone silently dispose a young woman. We've set up our camp now, but no tents were pitched. No one wants to obscure their line of sight with the cloth wall, let alone sleep tonight. We cooked a rabbit that Miguel managed to shoot today. The boy won't even have a spoonful of it, though. I fear if this goes on like this, the cold will take him. I've barely slept the past few nights. Only the cold, hard ground and the crackling of the fire we're sitting around now have kept me awake. Miguel and Patrick are still trading verbal jabs with each other as we all watch the desert around us for any signs of movement. The journal entry abruptly halts here, where it appears Henry's hand slipped as he left a blank line leading from the last word to the edge of the page. Friday, October 12th, 1855. Our situation has become more dire than I ever thought it could. My last entry was interrupted by the bickering of Miguel and Patrick reaching a breaking point. Both men were on their feet and swinging fists before I could even lift my eyes from my journal. As I rose to stop them, Miguel connected a mighty swing to Patrick's face. The blow sent him stumbling back, cupping the side of his face with his hand. Miguel wasted no time in striding over to the drunkard and grabbing him by the collar. At this point, Patrick proved himself faster than any of us thought he was. In one fluid motion, he retrieved a revolver from his jacket, placed it against the center of Miguel's chest, and fired a single shot. Miguel stood there stunned, still holding on to Patrick's collar, looking back and forth between the hole in his chest and Patrick's smug, smiling face. In his last moment, Miguel proved himself even faster still. Like lightning, he pulled his skinny knife out of his sheath on his hip and stuck it into Patrick's throat. Miguel collapsed onto the dirt, leaving the knife lodged into Patrick. With a look of sheer bewilderment, Patrick turned and walked away from camp, leaving a thick trail of blood in the dirt behind him. He didn't make it more than 20 feet before falling to his face and moving no more. In a matter of seconds, it was all over. I glanced into the wagon, and Jeb hadn't even bothered to look up to see what had transpired. It took a long while for me to decide what to do. Finally, I knew I had to start getting the bodies away from camp. Burials were a luxury we couldn't afford. I started with Patrick. I exhaled myself, dragging him about 100 feet from camp. The job wasn't done, however. I said a silent prayer for Miguel before I grabbed him by the boots to bring him to where I laid Patrick. When I finally reached the spot, a cold air was burning my lungs as I took in ragged breaths. It was a moment before my eyes, strained in the dark, realized what was wrong. Patrick's body was gone. The drag marks and the blood were present, but no corpse could be seen. I sprinted back to the flickering light of the camp. Though I heard nothing behind me as I ran, it felt as though the devil was on my heels. In a blur, I gathered rations for a couple of days, unbuckled the strongest looking of the two nags, grabbed a bedroll, found Miguel's .22, and finally pulled Jeb out of the wagon. With moonlight as our guide, Jeb and I rode away from the camp into the night. We had made it about a half a mile when a sound pierced the night. A sound that I had no idea what animal could make. The most horrific, painful squeal that a living creature could utter. It had come from our camp. I knew immediately it was...
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
The nag I had left behind. We rode now through the night and the entire day. It became dark again, and my instincts are yelling at me to keep on moving. However, neither me nor the horse could go any further. My eyes have never felt heavier. The horse is lying down now, and I already know I won't be able to get her up again. Jeb is tucked into the bedroll on the other side of the fire I've made for us. He still hasn't said a single word or accepted the food I offered. Maybe he already knew long before I did that this was all in vain. Like this journal, writing in this is the only thing keeping me awake now. I know if I let my mind wander, sleep will take. The journal entry stops abruptly here again. Saturday, October 23rd, 1855. This will be my last entry in this journal. If it makes it back to you, May, know that I made it to California. However, I'm sending this as a warning to never try to meet me here. It is also an explanation as to why I cannot come back to you and Delilah. I will never go into that damned wilderness again. I don't expect you to believe me, but still, I will chronicle what I saw that night to try and help you understand why I can't come back. I had lost the fight and fallen asleep while sitting there. I woke to something pushing me to the ground so hard my head bounced off the dirt. My vision swam, and I began to vomit what little food I had in me. When I finally caught my breath, I looked around the campfire with growing desperation. Jeb was no longer in the bedroll. I scrambled over to where I had left the rifle on the ground, nearly falling from the dizzy spell that had overcome me. With rifle in hand, I tore off into the desert yelling for Jeb. I received no response. Only the quiet winter wind shook the bushes. I circled our camp, not daring to go more than 100 feet from it lest I lost sight of it. I got control of my breath and started to listen for movement. After what felt like ages, I finally heard it. Soft footsteps not far from me, but leading away from camp. I whirled around towards the sound and readied my rifle. It was Jeb and another figure. He held the hand to what appeared from the back to be a young girl wearing a dirty yellow dress as she led him into the desert. They walked as if they were taking a stroll in a park. I aimed the rifle at her, but her fingers bobbed around my sides as my head continued to spin. With all the air left in my lungs, I bellowed out Jeb's name. This stopped the pair. They were now at the very far reaches of the fire's light. I could still barely make out her shape and the color of her dress, but her head was shrouded in darkness. She turned her head back towards me, and a pair of glowing yellow eyes stared back at me through the shadows covering her face. I'm ashamed, but any will to fight I had left evaporated. My arms went limp, and the rifle dropped to the ground. Those eyes turned away from me, and the pair continued their stroll into the desert, while that thing hummed the same song that Anna did. I returned to the fire and collapsed, and sobbed, and fell asleep. There is not much to say about the final days it took to make it to California. My supplies were almost completely depleted, but if it's just me out here, I can make do with very little. I saw no more eyes lingering in the dark when I made camp at night. In some sick way, I think that devil prowling those deserts had already had its fun with me. As I said before, I'll be sending this journal back to you as an explanation as to why I haven't come back and as an apology. I know that monster won't let me get away with my life twice. Tell Delilah I love her more than anything, but please don't show her this journal. Tell her I fell ill and passed, or that I was killed by robbers. Anything that will keep her from wanting to come find me. I love you, May. Goodbye, my one and only. Always yours, Henry. As Henry wrote, this is where the journal ends. I still can't reconcile the man who wrote the beginning of this journal and the one who wrote these last few entries. He seems completely sane, yet also wrote what I've shared with you all here. I need to know what happened to my great-great-grandfather. I also have the advantage of living in the north of Nevada. I can't think of a better place to pick up the trail that Henry left. After finishing this post, I was going to start an all-nighter sourcing the web for anything I could find on Henry, but something grabbed my attention. I think I hear someone humming a song outside my house. I think I stumbled across a monster in the desert. For context, I am a national park ranger, and I work at Joshua Tree in California. I have worked here for 3 years with my good friend Jordan. Jordan is much more manly than I am, has a beard, long hair, and is tall. We have been in a little information building at the back of the park for 2 years. We were tour guides at the front of the park for a year, but we got in trouble for trying to race each other and see which group could finish the trails the fastest. We were at the far back and rarely saw anybody because there's barely any trails back here compared to the front of the park, where everybody usually hikes and camps. In the back, it's just one or two trails and just desert. Occasionally, we would get one or two families coming into the building, usually asking where the bathroom is and where the nearest trail is. But other than that, we have no company, just us two. But this is where the weird part comes in. A ranger who was staying with us for 3 weeks told us stories about how rangers back here can see green lights miles away. He also told us that rangers would stumble across burnt bushes and Joshua trees in a circle just in the middle of the desert. He even told us his own weird story about how he was marking a new trail and came across these lizard tracks. These lizard tracks were as big as humans, and he tracked them for a few miles before the track stopped and he couldn't locate them anymore. He warned us that there might be aliens back here, and if we would go missing, then everyone would know why. I told myself that these stories were folktale and they weren't true. I never really experienced something weird until a few weeks ago. Me and Jordan were arranging the new pamphlets for the park when a tall lady came into the building. She tells me that her and her son were hiking one of the trails when he said he needed to go to the bathroom and walked behind a huge rock for privacy. She took some pictures of the desert, and after 10 minutes, she noticed that her son wasn't back yet. She went around the boulder, and he wasn't there. She said that his backpack was resting neatly on a small stone, and there was no other signs of him, like he had disappeared into thin air. She searched for him for a couple of hours, then came back to ask for help. We told her that we would find him, packed up our stuff, and went on to the trail. We started at the boulder, nicknamed Lion's Face, because it looked like a lion roaring, and agreed that we should travel in zigzags to cover a wider range in a shorter time. Maybe he ran off and was scared of something, and if we covered the trail in zigzags, we would be able to find out clues, instead of just walking in a straight line. We spent the day searching and put the tent up at night because it was too dark to look for him. In the morning, we could tear down the tent and keep searching for him, yelling out his name and searching for clues. Jordan said he would check how many miles we had walked with the map he had brought along with him. On the second day, the only clue we had was a singular footprint of man, and decided we should turn our direction to where the footprint was pointing. After that, we found absolutely zero evidence. We thought that was weird because we would have at least found another footprint because of the sand, but we had found nothing until the third day. While we were looking, Jordan stumbled across an orange tent. He called me over and I noticed that, first, the tent...
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Hey guys! Finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods, straight from world-famous restaurants, right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered, with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Was crushed. Second, it looked like wet sand was on the tent, as if someone dug up wet sand and placed it over the tent. Jordan opened the tent and stuck his head inside. He yelled and jumped back.
Jizo, dude, there's bones in this thing!
He ran to the nearest bush and threw up. I put on some gloves that I had stuffed in my pocket and prayed to God that the bones were mushy or had skin on them. I lifted the tent and poured the sand out. Sitting there in the middle of the sand pile were those bleached bones. They looked weathered and had been there for years. A white card was sticking out of the sand and I picked it up. It was the kid's driver's license. I looked back at the bones. There was no way that these bones were his. They were bleached and looked way too weathered to be his. He was only missing for 3 days. I stared at the bones for a little longer until Jordan called me over to him. Look, he said, pointing at the nearest bush. Sitting there nestled in the dead brush was a little cluster of sticks. I noticed it kind of looked like a person. A bundle of sticks as the head and a stick going across the bundle, possibly arms. I looked around and noticed that these bushes all had the same figures. I picked up the doll and Jordan started working on putting the bones in plastic bags. The entire time we were getting the evidence, I felt watched. It was as if something in the middle of the desert, miles and miles away, was staring straight into my soul, telling me that I shouldn't do this and leave the bones where they were or I was going to get hurt. I asked Jordan if he felt the same thing. He said yeah and that we should hurry up. We actually quickened our pace on the way back to the information building. And during the entire time, I noticed that Jordan's eyes were dodging left and right, as if he was looking for someone or something. We gave the evidence to the police and actually forgot about the whole incident until a few weeks ago. We were just chilling in the information room, trying to hide from the hot sun when I heard something on the window. I looked up and froze. Standing there was a man that looked like he was in his mid-20s. He looked like he had been in the desert for centuries. He was very dirty and his skin was cracked from the hot sun. But his eyes, the eyes were different. It was as if someone had took the eyes of a goat and put them in a human's eye sockets. He stood there, shielding his eyes and looking inside at us. He stood there for a few minutes before he walked off into the desert. He didn't go to a car, to a trail, just a straight line into the desert. I told a higher up and they said they thought it was weird, and if it happens again, to report it immediately. We were freaked out, but I kind of feel relieved because we were getting a veteran ranger that will be coming with us for the next few months. I will see if I find anything else weird, and will report it in the next few weeks. In the heat of the scorching desert, where the sun's rays danced on the sand like flames, stood the Oasis Motel. A dilapidated structure that seemed to beckon travelers with promise of respite amidst the harsh terrain. Its once vibrant sign now weathered and faded, casting eerie shadows on the deserted parking lot. Inside, the air was heavy with the smell of dust and decay. Amidst the oppressive heat, a group of weary travelers found themselves stranded at the Oasis Motel. Among them was Maya, a young woman with an air of quiet resilience, and Jake, a rugged adventurer with a haunting look in his eyes. As they checked into their rooms, they couldn't shake the feeling that something was off about the place. The receptionist, a gaunt figure with sunken eyes, greeted them with a forced smile that sent shivers down their spines. Once settled into their room, Maya and Jake decided to explore the motel grounds, hoping to escape the suffocating atmosphere of their rooms. They wandered through the deserted corridors, the sounds of their footsteps echoing eerily against the walls. Suddenly, they heard the faint whisper coming from one of the rooms. Intrigued, they approached cautiously and pushed open the door. Inside, they found a group of people huddled together, their faces contorted in fear.
We can't leave, one of them muttered, his voice trembling. He won't let us. Confused and alarmed, Maya and Jake tried to get answers from the group, but they only received cryptic warnings in return. He's always watching, another whispered, her eyes darting nervously around the room. Determined to uncover the truth, Maya and Jake pressed on, exploring every corner of the motel in search of clues. But the more they searched, the more they felt like they were being watched, like an unseen presence lurked in the shadows waiting to pounce. As night fell, the temperature plummeted, sending chills down their spines. They retreated back to the room, hoping to find solace in each other's company. But as they laid awake in the darkness, they couldn't shake the feeling of the impending doom that hung over them like a dark cloud. Suddenly, they heard a knock at the door, slow and deliberate. Heart pounding, Jake approached cautiously and peered through the peephole. But there was no one there, only the empty hallway stretching out into the darkness. Fear gnawing at their insides, Maya and Jake barricaded the door and waited, listening to the sound of their own ragged breaths echoing in the silence. Hours passed, but the knock never came again. Exhausted and on edge, they drifted into an uneasy sleep, plagued by twisted nightmares of shadowy figures lurking in the desert night. When they awoke the next morning, the sun was already high in the sky, casting a harsh light on the barren landscape outside. As they prepared to leave the motel behind, they couldn't shake the feeling that they were leaving something behind, something dark and sinister that lurked just beyond the edges of their vision. As they drove away from the Oasis Motel, the feeling of unease lingered, a shadowy presence that seemed to follow them wherever they went. And though they tried to convince themselves that it was just a trick of their mind, they couldn't shake the feeling that they had stumbled upon something truly malevolent, something that defied explanation and would haunt them for the rest of their days. In the desolate expanse of Arizona's rugged terrain, where the sun scorches the earth and the wind whispers of ancient secrets, a man known only as Joe awakens in a makeshift shelter, his body battered and his memory fractured. The scorching rays of the sun piercing through the canvas roof, casting a harsh light on his disoriented form. With a pounding headache and a sense of dread gnawing at his insides, he struggles to piece together fragments of memories that flicker like elusive mirages in the desert heat. Hunted by a ruthless gang for a crime he swears he didn't commit, Joe undergoes a perilous transformation, his once familiar face concealed beneath a layer of dirt and grime, his features obscured by the harsh shadows of the wilderness. With the help of a mysterious stranger known only as the Coyote, he ventures into the unforgiving expanse of the desert, where the landscape stretches on like a vast, untamed beast, ready to devour all who dare trespass upon its domain. The air is thick with the scent of sagebrush and juniper as Joe and the Coyote traverse the treacherous terrain, their every step a test of endurance and willpower. Beneath the relentless glare of the sun, they move with the stealth of predators, their senses sharpened by the primal instincts of survival. Each rustle of the wind, each crackle of dry brush beneath their feet, sends shivers down their spines, as if the very desert itself is alive with hidden dangers. As they journey deeper into the heart of the wilderness, Joe's memory began to resurface like shards of broken glass scattered across the desert floor. Flashes of images, fragments of conversations, and fleeting glimpses of faces long forgotten swirl in his mind like a sandstorm, threatening to consume him in a whirlwind of confusion and despair. But amidst the chaos, one name echoes with chilling clarity: Maria. In a remote town nestled amongst the dusty hills, Joe's encounters Maria.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityCairo.com. That's AbilityCairo.com.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Woman with haunting eyes and a fierce determination to uncover the truth. Drawn together by fate and bound by a shared destiny, they embark on the treacherous journey through the sun-baked landscape, where danger lurks behind every rock and the howl of coyotes echoes in the night. Together, they navigate the labyrinth streets of the town, where whispered rumors and suspicious glances follow in their wake like vultures circling overhead. In the dim glow of flickering streetlights, they uncover a tangled web of deceit and betrayal, where every alleyway holds a secret and every shadow conceals a potential threat. But as they delve deeper into the heart of darkness, Joe and Maria realize they are not alone in this search for the truth. A shadowy figure lurks in their periphery, watching their every move with eyes as cold and unforgiving as the desert night. With each passing moment, the sense of impending doom grows stronger, as if the very fabric of reality is unraveling around them, putting them deeper into a nightmare from which they may never escape. With every revelation, Joe and Maria are drawn closer to the heart of the mystery, their bond forged in the crucible of adversity and strengthened by the fires of determination. But as they confront the horrors that lurk in the shadows, they come face to face with the dark truth of all. Sometimes, the greatest monsters are the ones that dwell within. As the desert sun sets and the shadows lengthen, Joe and Maria stand on the precipice of destiny, their fates entwined with the ancient forces that have haunted the land since time immemorial. In the heart of the wilderness, amidst the howling winds and the swirling sands, they must confront their deepest fears and darkest secrets if they are ever to emerge from the darkness and into the light once more. In the scorching summer of 1985, Mesa, Arizona, found itself in the grip of an unrelenting heat wave. The sun beat down mercilessly on the barren desert landscape, casting long shadows that seemed to dance in the shimmering heat. Amidst the sweltering heat, a small suburban neighborhood rested at the edge of town, its streets lined with neatly manicured lawns and cookie-cutter houses. But behind the facade of suburban tranquility lurked a darkness that few dared to acknowledge. At the heart of the neighborhood stood an old, dilapidated mansion, its once grand facade now faded and worn by relentless desert sun. Known as the Blackwood Manor, it has long been abandoned, its windows barred up and its walls marred by graffiti. Rumors swirled amongst the locals of strange happenings within the mansion's walls, of ghostly apparitions and restless spirits. But for a group of adventurous teens, the allure of the unknown proved too tempting to resist. One fateful night, as the desert moon cast an eerie glow over the landscape, the teenagers gathered at the edge of the Blackwood Manor, their hearts pounding with a mixture of excitement and fear. Armed with flashlights and nervous laughter, they ventured into the darkness, determined to uncover the truth behind the mansion's haunting reputation. As they crossed the threshold into the mansion's crumbling interior, a chill wind swept through the air, sending shivers down their spines. The air was thick with the scent of dust and decay, and the floorboards groaned under their weight as they made their way through the labyrinth corridors. Every corner seemed to hold a new terror, from the cobweb-covered furniture to long-forgotten relics of a bygone era. But it was the shadows that seemed to hold the most ominous presence, twisting and contorting in the dim light of their flashlights. As they delved deeper into the mansion's depths, they stumbled upon a hidden staircase leading down into the bowels of the earth. With trepidation, they descended into the darkness below, the air growing cooler with each step they took. At the bottom of the staircase, they found themselves in a vast underground chamber, its walls adorned with strange symbols and occult paraphernalia. A sense of dread washed over them as they realized they had stumbled upon a site of dark rituals and forbidden ceremonies. But before they could turn back, a faint whisper echoed through the chamber, chilling them to the bone. It was a voice from beyond the grave, a haunting melody that seemed to seep into their very souls. With mounting terror, they realized they were not alone in the darkness. Shadows danced around them, twisting and contorting into grotesque shapes, as if the very fabric of reality was unraveling before their eyes. In a panic, they fled back up the staircase and out into the desert night, leaving the Blackwood Manor and its secrets behind them. But as they emerged into the cool night air, they could still feel the lingering presence of the shadows, a chilling reminder of the darkness that lurked just beyond the surface of their seemingly ordinary world.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.